Welcome, listeners, to yet another podcast from Tat Capital. Today, we are fortunate enough to have Bikash Barai, co-founder of Fire Compass, an AI-based cyber attack platform sitting out of Bangalore in India. Bikash, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Ram. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bikash. Just so that our listeners get a bit of a background in terms of what Fire Compass does and what led you to create Fire Compass, could you basically start off explaining your journey till date and what was the tipping point in your career slash professional life which led for the creation of Fire Compass and what Fire Compass does, so to speak?
So I'll give you a kind of bit of backstory, story behind how our journey got, how our journey had been till date and why we kind of picked up that problem, the problem which we are trying to solve. So both the evolution of this idea as well as our own journey. So basically, it kind of starts with my other co-founder, Nilanjan, and I. We had been at IIT Kharagpur together, which is one of the very well-known technology institutes out of India. And during those days, there's something very interesting that happened. Those were the very early days of hacking. There used to be all these hackers manually writing tools and scripts and hacking into systems, etc. This is almost like two decades back. And Nilanjan, who is my other co-founder, he had been one of those guys who had been a pioneer when it comes to hacking. So he was one of the very well-known hackers in the industry, which was not yet called an industry. It was more of a fraternity of hackers. So one interesting thing which I kind of observed was how he hacks. And my background had been more of computer science and algorithm. And we got this idea, like, how about using AI to automate this ethical hacking process? Because during those days, almost two decades back, hacking was purely driven by ethical hackers using their systems to go and try to hack into other organizations. So we thought, how can we make it scalable, make it more easy for any organization to do it on their own? So that's how we kind of started our first journey. And we built an AI-based tool to automate ethical hacking. And once we did that, we got a lot of awards and stuff like that from Intel, UC Berkeley, US Navy, Homeland Security, etc. But after a while, we kind of realized that we were getting more awards than business. So I went and asked one of our alumni, whom I consider as a mentor, that, you know what, people love this and we get a lot of appreciation, but not too many people are buying this. So what do you think about that? So he said, you know what, I love this product, but I don't have anybody to run it. So we thought, why not then, how about taking this product, hosting it online, and we run it for the organizations. So what we did was, we kind of just took the product, made it online, and we were running the product for our customers. And then people started kind of adopting it. And one day somebody came and told me, because there is something called SaaS. I said, okay, that's interesting. What is SaaS? So we looked into it and then eventually positioned ourselves as a SaaS-based ethical hacking product. And that kind of worked out pretty well. A lot of awards, interesting, cool thing, and also positioned in a business-friendly SaaS, having that SaaS word. We got lucky. We raised our venture funding. And with that, we started kind of building that true SaaS platform, took the product eventually to the international market. And we got a decent scale, had some 300-plus enterprise customers Sony, Oracle, ING Bank, Deutsche Bank, Daimler, and Bombardier, etc. So a lot of interesting customers. We also did a lot of interesting other stuff, like we broke some of the best security products in the world. Like we broke Microsoft BitLocker's encryption, McAfee SafeBoot, Intel HP Lenovo's BIOS security, AVG, Sophos, etc., etc. So we did a lot of very exciting stuff during that time, and eventually we got acquired, and now the product of the platform is part of Synopsys. So eventually, we had to stay for 2 years post-acquisition, and then we were looking for what's that next big idea, what's that next big problem that we could solve. And while trying to look out for that next big problem, which is interesting, we noticed something very interesting. And that is, if you look at the cybersecurity as an industry, the organizations or the top organizations today have a lot of investments, and they have a lot of these tools for doing vulnerability assessment, penetration testing, ethical hacking, whatever you might call. But despite that, if you look at the kind of breaches which are happening these days, like for example, Amex had an open MongoDB with all their customer data, which was exposed. Huh? Then the breach at Amazon, British Airways, Marriott, etc. Many of these breaches look apparently very simple. So we started asking this question that how come these organizations with great cybersecurity team, lots of great products, how are they getting hacked because of these simple vulnerabilities? So once we kind of dive deep into it, we notice something very interesting. And that is, around 10 years back, any system that had to go online had to always go through the IT team. But fast forward now, with the advent of cloud and IoT and APIs, etc., things have changed drastically. Today, because of these agile teams, etc., somebody for a large organization, somebody's South America team may decide that we'll create this system online and make a collaboration tool. And that is happening especially more because of this remote working. So organizations in their teams are creating new tools, new assets, making it online. The DevOps and the cloud guys start spinning out new cloud assets, and the security team doesn't get to know even like what has gone online. Created where applications talk to each other every other day. So such kind of interfaces or connection between two applications get built, but the security team is not aware of. Now look at this. All of a sudden, if you are the head of cybersecurity of an organization, you are like head of defense of Australia, but you don't know the map of Australia. So that makes it very hard to secure, right? You can't secure something if you don't know what to secure. So that's a very interesting new problem that has come up, which was not there 5 or 10 years back. And this is going to become a lot bigger with remote working, etc. So then how do we solve this problem where we don't even know what to protect and too many new things happening every other day? So solving this as a challenge became something very, very exciting and interesting for us. And we started kind of thinking, how do we solve this? And if you look at traditionally how this problem is solved, there is a technique, or rather there's a practice or a solution for this. And that solution is called red teaming. So what red teaming is essentially, where it's not just like the traditional ethical hacking, where you come and tell a hacker that here is my application, try to break into it. It's slightly different. Here you tell the ethical hacker that I'll not tell you anything about the organization. I'll not tell you what IPs I have, what systems I have, nothing. You go and discover whatever you can from the internet, and you try to break into. And you launch all kinds of attacks that you can, and we will see whether our security controls are actually working or not. So if you think of penetration testing as sending a missile to a particular target, then red teaming is like a full-fledged war, where you have army, air, navy, missiles, tanks, and CIA or whatever it is. So it's like a full-fledged war. So you may consider red teaming as the next much more powerful version of penetration testing. A good analogy is what I mentioned, sending a missile versus doing a full-fledged war. So how is it done today? Today it is done by using consultants. So consultants would come and do this. They will take 6 weeks to do one such exercise. And by the end of 6 weeks, when you get the report, already your attack surface has changed. It's like seeing your photograph, which is 10 years old. I had a lot more hairs then. It would look much better, but it's not how I look like today. So it's a good exercise to do, but it's not really enough.
So you're saying that's not really real time to cope up with the changing landscape of professional professional hackers, so to speak, whether it is illegal hacking or legal hacking. There are all kinds of permutations or combinations of possible attacks in the cyberspace. So, because very interesting, I think looks like your solutions that your company is building is something that most of us would need in the post-pandemic era. I think remote working and cloud-based solutions is probably the new normal for every organization to limit their technology spend at each organization level. I'm sure every one of us are taking advantage of cloud-enabled subscription-based solutions to build to bring the capital expenditures as low as possible to borrow technology, so to speak. So on that note, Bikash, what exactly goes on in your company in terms of its technical capabilities or the deep tech components of your company that allows you to build this scale and be relevant to the market at all times? How are you able to build that relevance currency to the market, and what sort of technical layers that your company is doing in terms of your technology stack that makes you so unique?
That's great. That's a great question. So basically, as I had discussed, that the problem which we are trying to solve is that today this red teaming exercise, which is very powerful and very important, and by the way, it is absolutely mandatory for many of these compliances for banking and financial services companies, etc., etc. So one is you must do it from the perspective of knowing your real security posture, knowing whether your security controls are really working or not. So it's a must-have from that perspective of knowing the reality, but also compliances makes it mandatory. But today it is manual. So how do we make it automated and scalable, just like what you have mentioned? So what we have done is we have built a platform which goes and indexes the entire world's cybersecurity information in a particular way. Like for example, if you look at Google, what Google did is it went and indexed all the web content of these various websites across the world, right? So you can just go and search something in Google and you get it instantaneously. So what we have done is something very similar, but in the context of cybersecurity. So we figure out all these information about every single IP addresses across the globe when it comes to the deep dark surface web, and put everything into a big data platform. So that's what we do. First is like collect all this information and put it into a big data platform. And the second thing is that once we have collected this information, we have to figure out automatically that which of these assets or which of these systems belong to, say, Bank of America or Oracle or whichever that organization is. So doing that next level attribution where I can know my own attack surface so that I can note that today there are 5 cloud assets that have gone online. Today there are these 5 new applications that has gone online, or my marketing team has created this new application which has gone online. So knowing that on a daily basis is very, very important. So the first part is the collection of all this data from the internet of the deep dark surface web. The second part is where we do this attribution, where we know what is relevant to you. So once that attribution is done, the next part is going and launching a full-fledged attack. So we are continuously indexing the entire internet. So to give you an idea, like if you are doing red teaming as consultants, it takes like 2 to 3 weeks to do a exercise for this discovery, which is otherwise known as reconnaissance or recon. So what the consultants take 2 weeks to do, we do it in 2 seconds. The reason is we have already done it. So it is to that level of speed at which we can do compared to the traditional consultant-driven model. We have this big data platform where everything is indexed and we use AI and ML to do the attribution. So that's the first part. The second part of the innovation is the attack engine. And doing this all possible permutations and combinations of attack, as what you have mentioned, that's a very, very hard problem because every day new attacks keep on coming, right? And so how do we make it massively scalable and up to date every day? So that attack platform which we have built also again uses AI to automatically orchestrate all these various possible attack paths. So that's the other part. So we have this innovation both in the case of the discovery of the attack surface as well as in the attack engine, but where it is able to automatically orchestrate all those kinds of attacks and launch it on the organization. So that's broadly, I would put the innovation into two major buckets. And because of this, today organizations are able to do this kind of red teaming exercise, which gets updated every single day, which was otherwise happening on a quarterly basis. And not just in terms of the effectiveness, also in terms of the cost effectiveness. Obviously, very much valuable to do it on a daily basis rather than doing it 4 times a year or 2 times a year. But on the cost side as well, the kind of value which we provide is typically at the price of 1 or 2 red teaming exercise. We are able to offer unlimited number of red teaming operations on the organization. So that's what technology has enabled us to do. So take what can be done 2x a year, and with the same price, we can offer unlimited. What takes 2 weeks to do, we can do it in 2 seconds.
Interesting, because so that does it mean that your technology stack and your selection process of indexing or going to the retribution at the start is so thorough that allows you to do a lot more real-time work at a fractional cost? So you're really playing on the opportunity cost significantly, but still not compromising on the quality of work. And is that achieved because of the way you are actually indexing your clients' data or products literally from word go? Is that how it's achieved?
Yes, in a way, you are right. So what we are doing is a completely different approach. Like, for example, if you have these horse-driven carts, you can make horse-driven carts efficient to a certain degree. But when you think of building an aircraft, it's a completely different way of doing it, right? So if you compare us with the conventional consultants, it's a very unfair comparison, because the consultants are doing that exercise every single time they're doing it for the customer. They're doing that same thing. Their people, their team are doing that same thing over and over again, like 100 times. And if you look at even for their team, they have really very intelligent guys, and it's very hard to hire people. It really doesn't make any sense for them to do that 90% of the thing which can be automated. So the reason for that scale is, or the reason for this effectiveness is, one is automation. The second is also storing the historical data of the internet.
So and how secure is the process of storing data? So how are you ensuring that when you're collecting this data on your clients' products and services, how are you ensuring somebody's not actually hacking your own systems?
Yeah, Rami, you're good in asking difficult questions. So yeah, that's a very good question. And if you ask me as a computer science enthusiast, cybersecurity enthusiast, I would be very, very paranoid. Today, I mean, whatever you do, like, one thing is, if you look at us, like, we broke McAfee and we broke Symantec products, like best of the security products in the world, or some of the best security products in the world. And that has taught us one thing, which is humility. If we can break the best known products, then others can also break us.
Sure.
So you have to do whatever can be done. Like, we are extremely paranoid being on the other side where we actually hack things. We definitely have to be paranoid. So we do all those conventional things that should be done, which you go and ask any organization in terms of that right architecture, right kind of coding, right kind of testing, and having the right kind of security controls, following the best practices like NIST cybersecurity framework, etc. We do all of those. But then, this is one thing which I want to highlight, that despite doing all of them, we are always very paranoid. Okay, and sure. That paranoia, I think, is very helpful. And also, we design systems and tools in such a way that even if we get compromised, still we should be able to secure things. So how to make things more anti-fragile, or
when you mean by doing a whole bunch of systems and checks and balances that you're putting in place to manage security, Are you also giving both clients and yourself some sort of a dashboard approach, or managing things by exceptions and triggering the right alarm systems and all of that? And that's can you? Central. Yeah. So how is that actually visibly happening for people? For, I think you said you had clients like Daimler's, people like Deutsche Bank's, people like ING.
So this was in our first venture. So in this venture, we have our customers like Sprint Telecom in US, which has now merged with T-Mobile, Infosys, then many of these banks and many of these top e-commerce companies, etc.
Sure. So, okay, so could you actually go through your existing customer base? What is it made up of? I know you mentioned few of these banks, and you also you built a global customer base into Fire Compass, and I understand the Fire Compass's vision from day one is always been to look out for global customer base as opposed to focus on India centric customers, so to speak. So what actually helped you as a company to attract global customers to take up Fire Compass in this early stages as the company is building more bells and whistles to make it really well-known global tech company, so to speak? What is that? What are the key differentiators, so to speak, that you're actually using in your sole sales speech to attract best customers?
Okay. That's a great question. So as a startup, whenever we start something, it's always very, very important that we have an offering which the customer will not be able to find out easily elsewhere. So you have to be so unique in your value proposition that a customer would be willing to kind of go and venture out with an early stage company. So that's very, very important, and that's a great pertinent question. So when we go and talk about the kind of things which we are doing, which is continuous automated red teaming, so that's something typically customers wouldn't know of another alternative. It's not that there's no other alternative. There's just a few companies in the world who are doing this, and amongst them also we have certain advantages, or we focus on certain things which they don't. So we have our own strengths within that, but typically when we go to a customer, it's mostly they don't know of any other alternative. It is something like that. So our key value proposition would be this continuous and automated red teaming, where you get alerts on a daily basis, just like what you mentioned in your previous question. Also from the perspective of, so one is the scalability and value from the perspective of security, and the second value is also from the perspective of the cost effectiveness, where at the price of like two red teaming exercises, you can get unlimited number of tests in a year. So these are what I would say two most important value which our customer kind of gets. So that had been in a slightly technical world. Those who know like what red teaming is, if I have to explain it a little bit further, some of the key use cases. One is knowing this what is known as shadow IT, or the unknown unknowns. Like, is it that today your marketing team started using a new SMS gateway, and that SMS gateway is exposing your data? Is it that today a new test system that got online and that has got production keys? Or is there that today a new database without any passwords went up online, etc.? So we give you answers to such questions, and those kind of surprises keep coming to the customer very often. And that's what makes it very sticky. So that's one, where you get to know your unknown unknowns. Second use case is ransomware attack surface. So today you know that organizations are frequently getting attacked by ransomware, and they have to either pay ransom or these ransomware guys would make the data public, etc., etc. So whatever these ransomware guys are doing in terms of trying to discover some risky asset which you have, some risky system that you have, and go and compromise it, we do exactly the same simulation without doing the bad thing. So we also continuously monitor the ransomware attack surface. So that's the second use case. Third use case is where today, imagine you have spent millions of dollars in cybersecurity. How do you know that your security operations center is actually doing the job? If a hacker attacks, how are you confident that the security operations center is actually on their toes and will be able to catch it? that. It's not by asking them, are you guys prepared? It's by testing them. So red teaming is the way to test the security preparedness of your organization. So that's the third use case. And the final is also compliance, because many of these banking and other regulatory compliances makes it mandatory, so you have to do it. I mean, we don't like that compliance angle so much. I'm a believer of true security, but if you need to like comply, you need to comply, right? So these are the four kind of key use cases of our technology, and two of the values which I mentioned earlier.
Because a bit of a change in direction, so to speak, just want to check what has been your view on the current landscape of India as a country. I'm of an opinion that India is going through a significant change in direction, so to speak, as far as technology sector itself is concerned. For a long time, India has celebrated its key competitive advantages as a country which has got significantly high caliber professionals who could potentially work at a fraction of a cost that that developed economies could do, and hence India has attracted an outsourcing kind of a services driven economy for a number of years. But what I'm seeing is a significant change in the mindset of young Indian entrepreneurs or young or mature businesses in India now kind of pivoting from a services style economy into more of a product economy. And I see that there is a significant reverse brain drain, so to speak. There has been many successful tech entrepreneurs / tech professionals wanting to actually migrate back to India to build their future product economies, product companies out of India. What do you think are the key ingredients that is actually really making this kind of a change in trend, so to speak, as far as technology industry itself is concerned?
Okay, that's another great question, Ram. So, if we look at the evolution of the Indian ecosystem, and there can be many of the many different insights. I'll share with you something which is coming to my mind right now. So if you look at the evolution of the Indian industry, so what are some of the key strengths which we have in India? So if you look at that, there will be many types of different strengths or characteristics, and many a times the same strength can be a weakness in some context. So if you look at the characteristics of the Indians, and there will be many characteristics, just to give you a few examples, one of the characteristic is, say, huge population. Second characteristic is very much focused on the regular education and maths and stuff like that. So every parent like focuses on that. So, and also somehow a certain kind of math skills is more prevalent there, and things like that. So there will be many of those characteristics, and some of these characteristics played very well in a specific context. In the sense, if you look at like the domination of various countries during various different periods of time, you will see that when a long time back, there was a period when navy or the naval strength of the countries would determine who is the superpower. Then came the Industrial Revolution. And I think now we are in that knowledge revolution. And during this knowledge revolution phase, obviously having that huge number of population or huge number of people in the country who are educated in a specific way with math skills, etc., that actually helped. I mean, you could quickly turn them into a big number of or a big factory of computer science folks solving certain kind of problems. Now there's another shift which is going on, and if you look at that shift, why is that shift going on? And that shift is happening because of a few reasons. Like once we have learned as Indians doing certain things, now came the competition. Like for example, the first wave of e-commerce companies in India could just go and do a land grabbing very easily because there was no other competition. Then came the next set of competition from US. And when competition comes, that's the time when growth happens. If I'm playing, say, badminton or tennis, and if my opponent is very weak, I'll not increase my skills, right? So now once the competition has come, and this is this new characteristic, which I would say, okay, that is competition. And this competition has allowed us to play against a good opponent, which has helped us to improve our skills of the game. And then we also saw, oh, by the way, we have some good players out there in US who wants to actually come back here. So let's have them as a part of the team and things like that. So playing with the competition, and also the other thing that has happened today, knowledge is pretty much accessible anywhere. It doesn't, I mean, you don't need to be in the Silicon Valley to have Silicon Valley, the knowledge from the Silicon Valley. Like, you can get a lot of Silicon Valley knowledge by listening to podcasts. And there's some great podcasts there. So knowledge is getting also disseminated a lot more easily. But still, there are certain advantages which Silicon Valley will have. I mean, you can't be an insider just by listening to podcasts, right? So we will also have our weaknesses in certain cases, but we also have our strengths. And one good thing which I think India is doing is we are playing on our strength, or we are being forced to play on our strength. Irrespectively, Indians had always been creative in different ways, right? We have certain Indian word for creativity or creative problem solving. So the creativity is there. We have good competition to play against. We have built those skills. We have those kind of people who have come back and putting together. And now you have a recipe for innovation, or you have the ingredients. And with those ingredients, now you can create a recipe for innovation. Earlier, it was not there. Earlier, in fact, the kitchen itself was missing, or rather there were no takers. Now today we are forced to innovate, plus we have all those ingredients to innovate. And given these two things, India is absolutely ready to innovate, and India is producing a lot of deep tech companies. We have innovated long, long time back when it comes to basic maths and discovering or inventing zero and things like that. I think now is another opportunity to create that next round of massive innovation, which creates a big impact for the humanity and for the entire world.
So, Bikash, one last question. For in your space, what are the most interesting companies that you've seen growing up in your space around the cybersecurity space globally that you would want to be aspiring to build a similar company to? So what are those companies that you would want to be known as, and where will Fire Compass direction, so to speak? You know, people say, I want to be the next Google, I want to be the next Amazon. What is the next step for Fire Compass?
So that's a very good question. I think that's a good way to kind of tell this story. I would say that I have, or we have, it's also a personal question, right? If you ask my our co-founders, they may have slightly different twist to this story. I would say it's not one, there are many.
Sure.
There are many to learn from, and it's not necessary that it has to be cybersecurity as well. So if I look at inspiration, the number of inspirations in terms of companies would be just too many. But just to name a few, I would say, like for example, Google would be one of those innovations in the field of cybersecurity in the early days. FireEye did some very interesting stuff. Then Palo Alto is there in cybersecurity. If you look at even other spaces, there are many other niche spaces where companies have done really wonderfully well. So I would probably go and pick up ideas from many of those companies I just named, three or four or five. But if I look at inspiration, I will probably have, I mean, tons of inspiration. And then also individuals and not just companies, like Bill Gates for me is a great inspiration. It's not just he built a great company, etc., but the kind of contribution which he is making for the humanity, that's really a big inspiration. And I would personally love to do something for the world in some manner. That would become one of my probably top things which I would love to do a few years down the line, thing which I would love to do.
Because thank you for taking your time to and sharing some of your thoughts with us on this podcast. We look forward to interacting with you in the upcoming webinar on the 29th. We hope some of your lessons that you learned from your journeys till today will be of some inspiration for many other folks through our webinar, and potentially inspire some of our investors to potentially look at Fire Compass as a company that they should potentially be part of, and give you guys a much needed strategic investment fuel to really accelerate your company into the next big global company. On that note, really appreciate your time and thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Ram. Really appreciate giving me the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you.